left in this village and save as many of the children as we can, Gert said, turning back to me and Nox. Amy, you go with Nox to find the lion. Send a summoning spell when you've got him in your sights. Don't try to defeat him yourselves. He's too powerful for either of you to take on without us. Nox nodded, and Mombi and Gert disappeared. He balled his hand into a fist, and when he opened it, he was holding a glowing ball of blue flame, which he blew on gently. It spun from his hand and hovered a few inches in the air. Nox blew on it again. It circled lazily around us, then darted back and forth for a few seconds, before zinging off in the opposite direction of the village, leaving a trail of blue energy in its wake. Nox jerked his head wordlessly toward the forest on the other side of the field. I pulled the knife he had given me out of the air, like he'd taught me to do, and his eyes met mine. The rest of his face was stony and emotionless, but his eyes were flashing with something else that I couldn't place. Pride, maybe? They seemed to be saying, "See, this is it. This is what I told you about." I nodded, hoping he knew that I understood. And we went racing off, chasing the light. It got darker as we went farther into the trees, until finally the only illumination was the dim light from the tracing charm that was leading us. But my training served me well now, and my feet nimbly avoided every obstacle as if I'd run down this path 1,000 times. After a few minutes, we heard a roar in the distance. Nox put a finger to his lips and slowed down until we reached the edge of a clearing. "Stay back," Nox whispered. "They won't notice us yet if we're careful." The clearing was crowded with animals. Some I recognized and others I didn't. There were foxes and crocodiles and wolves and tigers and bears. A few were walking around on their hind legs, while others were pacing on all fours. It was a nightmare zoo. A menagerie of wild, mutated animals of every size and shape. These were the lion's beasts. Did the lion command every animal in Oz, or did they have a say in the matter? I wondered, thinking of Star. If anyone was stubborn enough to show a little backbone, it was my pet rat. With any luck, Pete was keeping her nice and safe. But if she ever had the bad luck to meet this guy, I hoped she would give him a good, hard bite. The beasts had surrounded a group of Gillikin people, who were lined up neatly in the middle of the clearing like they were waiting for something. Or maybe like something was waiting for them. At the front of the line, I saw the lion himself for the first time in the flesh. He had been a vague, hazy shadow in Glamora's scrying pool, but now, in person, I realized exactly how terrifying he really was. Really, he was barely recognizable as a lion at all. He looked like a monster, like some warped nightmare version of the King of the Jungle. He was huge and golden, with bulging, grotesque muscles and a filthy, snarled mane. His lips were curled back, bearing a mouth crowded with sharp, long, crooked fangs. "Is that what he's always looked like?" I asked under my breath. Nox just shook his head and signaled for me to keep watching. There were about 10 townspeople in line. At the front of it, a trembling man with a top hat and a purple beard stumbled forward to where the lion stood. He clasped his hands in front of him, and I could tell that he was pleading with his captor. But they spoke too quietly for me to hear what he was saying. I snapped my fingers, casting a listening spell. As I did it, I felt energy flowing out of my knife and into my body. The knife made magic so much easier. "We've given you everything that you asked for," the man was saying. "We have nothing left. Please, just leave us alone. We're Dorothy's loyal subjects. We'll help you in any way we can." "There's still plenty you can give me, Mr. Mayor," the lion said. He widened his jaw lazily, almost like he was yawning. Thick ropes of drool rolled down his chin as he leaned forward on his haunches. The mayor levitated a few inches off the ground to meet him. "I couldn't tear my eyes away." At first, it looked like the lion and the man were kissing. But they weren't. Their mouths were inches apart, not quite touching. The man looked like he was struggling, but then his mouth fell open too, as his face contorted in pain, and something that looked like red smoke came spewing violently out of him. I couldn't tell whether it was vomit or blood or something worse. Whatever it was, the lion lapped it up hungrily. "What's he doing?" I asked in horror, gripping Knox's arm. "The lion eats the fear of others," Knox explained in a whisper. "It's how he survives. How he gets stronger." As if proving Knox's point, the lion's muscles rippled and bulged. He was changing. He was growing. The man was changing, too. His beard went from purple to gray in a matter of seconds. His rounded cheeks turned gaunt as the lion finished and dropped him to the ground. The mayor gasped for air, suddenly old and frail, but smiling, too. I realized I understood why. He wasn't scared anymore. "Hopefully you won't ever have to face him," Knox said. "But if you do, try not to be afraid." Not exactly possible, I thought, looking at the smiling old mayor. What will happen to the mayor now? Will they let them go? Knox just shook his head sadly. As we watched, a hyena and a giant rabbit, who was probably as tall as I was, grabbed another victim from the line and led him forward to their leader. The rabbit seemed to be the lion's second in command. He was on his hind legs just like the lion. He had sharp buck teeth and giant, watery, bloodshot eyes. The hyena, also walking on two legs, was every bit as creepy. He looked nervous, jumping at every sound in the woods around him while he assisted the rabbit. And there were a lot of sounds to react to with a zoo of animals behind them. "We have to stop them," I whispered to Knox. He shook his head. "Not alone. I'll call Mombi. There's no way to do it without blowing our cover, though. So be ready." I took a deep breath and prepared myself as he conjured another ball of light from his hand and sent the flare spinning out into the darkness. This was it. The orb went whizzing into the trees, and as it did, a wolf lurking on the edge of the crowd pricked up his ears, jerked his head up, and let out a howl, his quick eyes darting from the ball of light straight over to its source. That source being me and Knox. The lion looked up from his second victim, trying to find the cause of the commotion. With a wave of his arm, he released his beasts like a violent tide that came right toward us. I had seen a few members of the Tin Woodman's Guard. They were eerily organized and obedient. But the lion's army was different. They were wild and disorganized, each one of them operating on its own. The wolf sped ahead of the pack in a gallop. Knox stepped forward and, in one swift motion, pulled out the sword he'd had strapped to his back, meeting the wolf with a gut opening slice. And then we were surrounded. Nox ducked and feinted and swung, flames trailing behind him, but every enemy he sent flailing to the ground was replaced by another. I couldn't help Nox, and Nox couldn't help me. A group of winged monkeys had descended from unseen perches in the trees and were now spinning around me like furry little gymnasts, clawing and snapping with pointy little fangs. They were quicker than I was. Even when I used my magic to dodge out of their way, they seemed to know my movements before I knew them myself. Don't be afraid, I reminded myself. I lunged, pulling my knife through the air, trying to be fearless. One was bigger than the rest, and more vicious-looking, too. He flew right for me, claws outstretched. I raised my knife, ready to fight. But then I hesitated, remembering what Indigo and Ollie had told me, that the winged monkeys were under Dorothy's control. No matter how horrible they seemed now, they weren't attacking me because they wanted to. They were doing it because they had to. My split second of sympathy cost me. The monkey wrapped his hands around my neck and his legs around my waist. He was stronger than he looked, and I struggled to disentangle myself as he squeezed my throat tighter and tighter, chattering maniacally, his rancid, sour milk breath hot against my cheeks. I gasped for air, feeling myself grow dizzy. Nox got to the monkey just in time, wrenching him from me just as I was about to pass out. He snapped the monkey's neck before tossing him to the ground. "Why did you do that?" I cried. "If you clip their wings, they won't be enchanted. They won't serve Dorothy." Nox looked at me like I was insane. "Amy," he said, "in case you hadn't noticed, this is a war. Now's not the time to start worrying about the plight of the poor monkeys." I looked at the dead monkey on the ground, its wings now folded over him like a pathetic blanket. There wasn't time to dwell on it, though. The rest of the monkeys had closed in on us. We were surrounded. But I pulled out my knife, hoping I could defend myself with as little collateral damage as possible. I wielded my blade almost instinctively as the next monkey sprung at me, striking him in the chest. He screamed, collapsing. I couldn't tell if he was dead. I hoped not, but there was no way to find out. Another one was on me already. This one got close enough to swipe at my stomach before I managed to take him down. He slid to the ground in a heap of fur and feathers. They kept on coming, but Nox and I were a good team. We made quick work of them. Some writhed in pain. Others seemed to give up immediately, almost like death was a relief. As the bodies piled up around us, I realized Nox was right. It was them or us. I looked up to find another wave of beasts descending on us. This time, a group of giant crocodiles lumbering toward us with swords and spears. I remembered the bumpy shadows in the scrying pond, lurking behind the lion. They were even worse in the light. Slimy green skin. Triple rows of teeth exposed and ready. They were slower than the monkeys, but more massive. I didn't know how my knife could penetrate their thick reptilian skin. "You ready?" Nox asked. He whirled around into a crouch, his back pressed against mine, and we prepared to fend the attackers off. "I'm ready," I said, ignoring all the blood and the pain in my left arm from where the monkey who'd tried to strangle me had bitten down with his sharp little teeth. Then everything stopped. The hyena dropped to the ground, and a split second later, The rabbit did the same. What the hell? Were they dead? I looked around. They were frozen. Every beast, every creature of the forest, all frozen, as if someone had pushed a giant pause button. But how? I looked immediately to the lion. Had he done this? But he seemed as surprised as Knox and I were, dropping the girl whose fear he'd been feasting on into a heap on the ground and looking up. During the fight, he'd been happy to let his henchmen take care of business while he enjoyed his dinner. But now he was interested. This isn't good, I thought, nervously shifting my grip on my blade. Whatever spell had just frozen all our other enemies didn't seem to have any effect on the lion himself. And I still had no idea who had cast it. The lion rose up on his legs in a fury and roared into the sky. Then I understood. I could feel her coming, could feel the warmth of her energy suffusing my body. It was Gert. Chapter 24. I looked up to see Gert descending from the sky. She landed in the middle of the clearing amidst the strange, museum-like menagerie of the lion's still-frozen henchmen. Without a word, she raised her hand, and a solitary lightning bolt appeared from above, coursing silently through her body. I gasped. What was happening? I stared at her squat, round body as it began to glow with energy, her face burning with a fury that was almost inhuman. For the first time, I thought I understood why she called herself wicked now. At that moment, the citizens of Pumperdink, who had been just as frozen as the lion's beastly army, seemed to be released from her spell. They began shouting and scurrying around, scattering in every direction, running for their lives. I looked at Knox. "She's using everything she has to hold the beasts," he said, "but it will take all of her concentration. The lion's too strong for her. We need to protect her until Mombi gets here. She'll know how to finish him." He sprung forward. "Let's see how you deal with someone who's not afraid of you," he snarled. He thrust his hands up, and a torrent of sizzling blue energy came shooting out. Growling in anger, the lion leapt through the air and landed with a crash at Knox's feet. But Knox had disappeared. He materialized behind the lion just in time to take a swing at him. If it had been baseball, Knox would have hit a home run. If the lion had been a normal lion, Knox would have sliced his head clean off from behind. But this wasn't a game, and this lion made the lions I'd seen in the zoo look like kittens. Knox connected with a thwack, but all it did was make the lion mad. He spun around and lunged again, and Knox barely managed to get out of the way in time. I still hadn't moved. I couldn't help it. Maybe Knox wasn't afraid, but I was. But when the lion grazed Knox's cheek with his claw and I saw blood, my body forgot all about fear and sprung into action. I held my knife close, drawing out as much magical power as I could from it. I zapped myself to Knox's side. At last, I was finally getting used to fighting like this. The lion jumped back, momentarily surprised. He hadn't been expecting me, but it only took him a second to get his bearings and charge, unhinging his jaw and leaping for me. I didn't let myself flinch. Instead, I took advantage of the moment and thrust my knife forward into his gaping jaw, hoping that at least there he was vulnerable. I was right. I was lucky. My blade sank to the hilt, and when I pulled it out, hot, sticky blood gushed out of the lion's mouth. He recoiled and let out something that almost sounded like a whimper of pain. At first, I thought I'd actually done it, finished him with that one blow to the spot where he was vulnerable. It would have worked in a video game. But the lion wasn't going to be beaten that easily. With blood still pouring down his face, he pivoted and, in a flash, wrapped both of his massive paws around Nox's neck. "The runaway," he said, in a tone that was velvety and smooth, almost a purr. He was looking at Nox, but it was clear he was talking to me. He cocked his head and sniffed, his nostrils flaring as if he could still smell the other place on me. "Everyone in the kingdom is on the lookout for you, little one. I thought I was just out for a snack tonight. I never expected to find you. Dorothy will be so pleased when I bring you back to her. Let's make a trade. You give up and come with me, and I'll let your friend go." Nox's eyes met mine, fierce and sure. "Do not make a deal," they seemed to be saying. "I'm not going anywhere with you," I said, trying to sound more certain than I was. "He doesn't mean anything to me." The lion shook out his mane and gave me a wicked smile. "Very well," he said. He opened his enormous jaws and, as I watched in horror, blue smoke began streaming out of Nox's eye sockets and nostrils. Blue. The color of his magic. Nox began to shake. "Stop!" I screamed. I raised my knife and prepared to throw it, aiming it at the lion's head. But I hesitated. What if I hit Nox instead? What if it didn't work? I had been training, but I still wasn't ready for something like this. As I stood there, paralyzed by self-doubt, Gert whooshed by me in a streak of white light. As she came to a stop, the beastly guard she'd been holding motionless with her spell began to stir to life all around us. They were still looking dazed and sluggish, but it would only be a matter of time before they recovered their bearings. In other words, we were screwed. Gert clapped her fists together, and as she pulled them apart, Nox went flying from the lion's grip and landed in the grass a few feet away. "Take me instead," Gert hissed at the lion. "I'm an old woman. But I have more for you to feast on than the two of them combined." "No!" I cried, but she ignored me. The lion looked her up and down, considering the offer. He must have known that I was more valuable than either Gert or Nox. But he was hungry and hurt. He probably figured he could take her first and still have me when he was done with her. The lion nodded. Gert stepped forward. "Stop!" I shouted again, leaping forward to pull her away. I couldn't let this happen. But Gert had other ideas. She flicked her wrist at me, and I went falling backward to the spot on the ground where Nox was already lying. When I tried to stand, I found that all of my muscles were frozen. Gert just shot me a sly smile. It was only then that I knew what she was playing at. Gert was fearless. There would be nothing for the lion to suck from her. I hoped she had something better to give him in its place. The lion had no idea, though. He pawed at the ground and smiled greedily as he unhinged his mangled, blood-soaked jaw. Gert didn't so much as pause. She looked up at her old enemy with a glint of cheerfulness in her gaze, and she pursed her lips into a kiss. A flash of light blinded me for a second as the lion began to stiffen and writhe. He tried to pull away, but it was too late. The stream of energy coursing between his mouth and Gert's was white, not blue like before. And it was coming from the lion, not from her. Her body was shaking like a leaf as she absorbed it. Every muscle in the lion began to shrink, like a balloon deflating. His eyes widened in something that looked like surprise. No, not surprise. Cowardice. Instead of giving him her fear, she was draining him. Now. Gert's telepathic voice echoed weakly in my head like a whisper down an empty corridor. I realized that I could wiggle my fingers again. I could move. Nox realized it too. He jumped to his feet and lifted his sword one more time. At that same moment, Gert collapsed in a heap. She'd done what she needed to do. Nox sliced at the lion's belly, and blood gushed from the wound. The lion tried to roar, but all that came out was a high-pitched squeal. I was on my feet then, too. I dove forward, ready to finish him off once and for all. But I was too late. Even in his weakened state, the lion was somehow already bounding away, retreating back across the clearing and into the forest, his army of beasts following their leader. Her plan had worked. She had beaten him. I stood up, ready to cheer. But Nox was standing too, and he didn't look nearly as happy. We almost had him. Where the hell was Mombi? I had been wondering that too, but when I saw that Gert was still on the ground, everything else went out of my head. She wasn't moving. She was lying in front of us like an overstuffed rag doll, her arms and legs splayed out at the wrong angles. Gert! I knelt by the witch's side. Nox was already crouched over her, trying to pull her up and into his chest. Hold on, Nox was whispering. Mombi's on her way. We'll get you to the spring. Gert's lips trembled. She was trying to smile. For me. For Nox. But her soft, fleshy body was spreading out into formlessness, almost like she was melting before my eyes as she sprawled, convulsing on the ground. What she had taken from the lion must have been too much to absorb, even for her. The green grass beneath her turned from green to brown to black charred dirt. It was as if someone had taken a torch to it. Nox placed his palms on Gert's chest and bit his lip in concentration. Blue sparks glittered at his fingertips, but immediately petered out. Come on, I muttered, willing his magic to work. He did it again, and again nothing. Suddenly, Gert's arms shot up and she grabbed my wrist, clenching tight. Her lips began to move. She was mumbling something under her breath. At first, it sounded like she was speaking a different language, but when her lips stopped moving, I was able to understand her words in my mind. It was an incantation. North, south, east, west, wind, fire, sun, earth. Protect her and keep her. Protect her and keep her. Now I was crying. Gert, I managed to say. Please, I need you. Nox was ignoring us, still trying desperately to use his magic to bring her back from the brink. "Come close, dear," Gert gasped. Her face was once again the warm, kind face I'd first seen when I'd woken up in the caves, frightened and alone. I saw the witch, good or wicked, it didn't matter anymore, who had comforted me and fed me, who had helped me find my magic. I leaned in over her. She tilted her head up and kissed me on my brow. I felt warmth wash over me. It started where her lips met my forehead and bloomed all over, until my skin was somehow coated in Gert's kiss. "Gert, no!" I gasped. What had she done? She needed every bit of strength to hold on. Whatever she had given me, I didn't want it. I didn't want a goodbye. "This will keep you safe," Gert said. "You have to do something," I croaked at Nox, tears streaming down my cheeks. He had finally given up and sat back, and had silently watched Gert bestow her kiss upon me. "Please, save her. Use your magic, you have to." Nox shook his head sadly. "There's nothing I can do," he said, looking away. Gert looked up at me. "It has to be you, child. You have to do it," she said weakly. "Do what?" I asked, somehow believing that as long as I held onto her gaze, then she would hold onto me. "You have to kill Dorothy, Amy." Chapter 25. I woke up the next morning feeling spent and disoriented, my mind a jumble of hazy images that appeared one by one in my head like pages in a horrible picture book. The burning village, the eerie scene in the forest, Nox's determined face as he fought back an onslaught of beasts. I felt like I was being plunged naked into a frigid pool as the rest of it came back to me. The lion's gaping, bloody maw, Gert's tender kiss, and the strange way I'd felt the life slip out of her as I'd held her in my arms, her body dead on the ground. In the enchanted softness of my bed, I tried to tell myself that it hadn't really happened, that it had all been a dream. It was only when I felt a tingling on my forehead, in the exact spot where Gert had kissed me, that I knew it had all been real. At that stinging realization, I jolted instantly out of bed and took a shaky step forward, followed by another, and another, then another, until I was in the center of the room, where I stopped in a state of paralyzed panic. I had no idea what to do with myself. I couldn't go back to bed. I couldn't leave. So I just stood there, trying to will the memories out of my head. I didn't want to think either, but thinking was the only thing I could do. I don't know how long I stayed like that. It could have been a minute, and it could have been an hour. But I was still standing in that same position when a ghostly, luminous butterfly came floating through the wall and hovered in front of me. I accepted its entrance without surprise or curiosity. It was like I had been expecting it. "Find me," the butterfly said, speaking somehow in Glamora's voice, and I nodded and began to get dressed. I made my way through the Order's tunnels with a numb and heavy feeling. With every step I took, I felt the weight of what had happened yesterday bearing down on me. The door to Glamora's room was ajar, and I pushed it open without thinking about it, only to freeze abruptly when I saw the witch's reflection in the ornate, gilt-framed mirror of her vanity. She was crying. Not just crying. Her entire body was shaking with grief as she hunched over the table in a contortion of pain. She looked so small and powerless, so unlike herself, that half of me wanted to turn and leave her while the other half wanted to rush over and comfort her. I did neither. Instead, I just watched, unable to move, unable to say anything, knowing that she would never want me to see her like this. Her fiery hair, always so perfectly coiffed, was frizzy and disheveled. A single strap of her elegant silk nightgown drooped across her shoulder. Her face was tired and worn, etched now in a map of sags and wrinkles, and that scar on her cheek that she usually kept hidden. She looked like she had aged 20 years in one day. It was hard to believe it was her at all. But even in this bedraggled and unfamiliar state, Glamora was still Glamora. The liquid pooling in the corners of her eyes was glittering and crystalline, and each tear that rolled down her cheeks and tumbled from her chin made a small plinking noise as it landed on the vanity. Looking closely, I saw that the surface was strewn with a messy scattering of them, tiny teardrop jewels that just kept on coming. Glamora was crying diamonds. Suddenly, she seemed to sense me watching her, and she looked up. I felt embarrassed to be caught, and embarrassed for her, but I didn't look away. In that moment, I owed her the dignity of an unwavering gaze. It was the least I could do.
"Amy,"
she said, sitting up straight and tugging the strap of her gown up to a more decorous position.
"Come in."
As Glamora spoke, her hair rearranged itself into a sleek chignon. The lines of her face melted away, leaving her as youthful and refreshed-looking as I'd ever seen her. Every trace of vulnerability was gone now. Now she was cool and unreadable. The jewels on the table caught the light, and I couldn't help but glance over at them. There was something about seeing them lying there in their scattered little pile that chilled me. What kind of person is so hard on the inside that she cries diamonds? Glamora noticed me staring. Somehow she knew what I was thinking, and she shook her head ruefully.
"Magic loves change," she said with a sigh. "Do enough of it, and it will warp you in strange ways. It's the first law of enchantment. Use it to change the outside, and after a while the inside changes too. So I traded my tears for beauty. Well, it could be worse, couldn't it?"
"Yes," I said quietly, "it could." But I wasn't so sure.
"If you think I'm bad, you should see what comes out when my sister cries," she said.
I couldn't tell if she was joking. But then she clapped her hands, signaling that it was time to change the subject and get down to business.
"Now then," she said, "we suffered a great loss yesterday, an unimaginable loss, as you know."
I waited for her to go on.
"What you may not know," she continued, "is that Gert was by far the most accomplished magic user in the Resistance, more powerful than me or Mombi, more powerful than any of the witches in the Order's other cells, perhaps the only person in Oz whose power could rival my sister's. They didn't make her the Good Witch of the North for nothing, you know."
She rolled her eyes and sighed, momentarily recalling some old rivalry before moving along.
"Without Gert,
We no longer have the power to reliably hide ourselves from Glinda and Dorothy. They will be looking, and it's now only a matter of time before they find us. As a result, we have decided to move our plans forward earlier than expected. She folded her hands primly in her lap.
Good, I said.
Glamora gave me a careful once-over. Do you understand what that means? I was pretty sure I did, but I took a second before I answered, just to let it sink in. Yes, I finally said, sitting up straight and squaring my jaw in resolution. It means it's time for me to do what I came here to do. As I said the words out loud, the numbness inside me seemed to let up. Not a lot, but enough that I actually felt something other than a dull and aching emptiness. Mostly anger. Cold and burning anger at the same time.
Are you sure you know what you're agreeing to? Glamora asked.
I didn't know why she cared. I understand, I said, tossing my hair defiantly. It's time for me to kill Dorothy. Glamora nodded, satisfied.
I wish more than anything that I could do it myself, she said. But it has to be you. There's no other way.
At first, I thought she meant it to be something like an apology. But then I noticed the way her shoulders had tensed up in a barely concealed combination of rage and regret, and I realized that she was actually envious of me. That to her, it was a privilege. Well, maybe it was. With that, the witch stood and ran her hand along her nightgown. It rippled like water and resolved itself into a more presentable outfit for the day, a tailored tweed suit in a somber mauve shade, cut primly to the knee.
No matter what the occasion, we must present the proper face to the world, she said, sounding like she was speaking more to herself than to me. Now, come. We have to have a talk with Mombi. You'll be leaving for the palace today.
Mombi had showed up a second too late, a second after I'd laid Gert's lifeless body onto the ground, at just the second when it didn't do us any good. She'd come swooping in through the trees in a swirl of purple light, fists clenched and eyes blazing, ready to fight. But when she saw me and Nox, she stopped in mid-flight and hung in the air. A look of sick understanding passed across her face. She landed with a thump before kneeling and placing a hand to the side of Gert's face.
There was a child.
She stopped to collect herself. I had never imagined that Mombi could seem so human.
I couldn't leave her. I thought Gert would be able to handle it on her own. I thought...
She betrayed no emotion after that. Instead, she bowed her head and began a solemn chant. I somehow knew instinctively that this wasn't a spell to bring Gert back to life. There are some things that no amount of magic can accomplish, and this was one of them. This was a ritual to lay Gert to rest. Mombi's muttered words were unintelligible and ancient-sounding, with a wandering melody buried somewhere deep below their surface. The chant sounded like one of those weird songs you sometimes hear flipping through dials on an old radio, only to pause on a station that barely comes in, the tune so far away that it's hard to tell if it's even a tune at all, or if it's just static. The old witch passed her hands up and down along Gert's body as she sang. And as she did, Gert began to melt into a pulsing, flickering puddle of mystical electricity that slowly seeped its way into the earth. Whatever magic Gert still had left in her,
She had given it back to Oz now. Then Gert was gone without a trace, like she had never been there at all. But she had been there. She had sacrificed herself to save us. No, forget that. She had done so much more. Even if I had never quite been able to figure out, never really been able to tell where the good ended and the wicked began for her, I had known, by the end, that she had believed in me, not just as the one who would be able to defeat Dorothy, but as Amy Gum. None of us spoke as we joined hands and shot up through the trees and into the air. There was nothing to say. This time I didn't bother looking at the ground as we soared over Oz. I had seen enough for one day. Mombi had disappeared as soon as we were back in the caves. Nox took me by the hand and walked me back to my room. He pressed a gentle hand to my shoulder. I opened the door and stepped inside, not looking back. That was yesterday. Now it was today. Glamora and I found Mombi in the war room, seated at the table across from a girl I'd never seen before. She looked terrified. Her shoulders heaved silently as she cradled her face in her palms. Glamora and I each took a seat. "This is Astrid," Mombi said. The girl rocked back and forth, not looking up. "Until last night, Astrid was a servant in the palace. Today, she has been given the opportunity to join our cause. Astrid, meet Amy." "Hi," I said, not quite understanding where this was going. "If all goes well, Astrid will be returned unharmed to the palace when our mission is complete." Mombi cast a meaningful, ominous look in Astrid's direction. "If she chooses to make a nuisance of herself, things will not be so pleasant for her." If all goes well. Then I got it. Astrid hadn't decided to join the Order. She hadn't been rescued from a burning village. She had been kidnapped. That was why she looked so scared. A chill shot down my spine as I remembered that things were never easy around here. Good and evil were always changing places with each other. For the first time, Astrid looked up at me. Her eyes were big and pleading, pooled with tears. Her chin trembled as she looked desperately at me, like she was hoping I'd be the one to save her. But I was out of pity. She would have to choose her own fate, just like the rest of us. I looked back to Mombi. "Tell me what I need to do," I said. A satisfied smile crept across her withered face. "Well, you need to become her, naturally." I leaned back in my seat, knowing that with witches, it only tangled things up when you asked too many questions. It was easier to just wait for them to explain themselves. Mombi proved true to form. "Today you will assume Astrid's identity and take on her job as a servant in Dorothy's court. You will infiltrate the palace and ingratiate yourself with the princess. You will learn her habits and her hatreds. You will learn when she goes to bed and when she wakes up in the morning, her fears and her weaknesses, and her secret prides and sorrows. In the guise of little Miss Astrid here, you will learn everything there is to learn, and you will relay it back to us. Then, when the time is right, you will strike." At this, Astrid let out an anguished, choked squeal. "She looks nothing like me," I said. "How am I going to impersonate her?" Mombi sprung to her feet, reached into her cloak, and pulled out a dagger. in one sudden motion. Before the poor girl even knew what was happening, Mombi had grabbed a fistful of her hair and yanked. Astrid's head jerked backward. She yelped again, and when she saw Mombi raise her knife into the air, the yelp became a scream. The blade flashed through the air. I held my breath. But instead of slicing the maid's throat open like I'd anticipated, Mombi simply lopped off a large hank of her white blonde hair. "Now," Mombi said, "go ahead and say your name 4 times. Astrid sat there frozen. "Say it!" Mombi screamed so loudly that even Glamora jumped in her chair.
Astrid, the girl stammered uncertainly.
"No stuttering," Mombi said sternly. Astrid gulped.
"Astrid! Astrid! Astrid!" she finally managed to spit out.
Mombi smiled. "Good girl," she said, and she began to crush the hair up into a tight ball before gesturing to me to come forward. "Here," she said, thrusting it out. Reluctantly, I took it from her. "What do I do with it?" I asked, holding it up.
"Eat it," she said.
"Eat it?
Eat it."
I looked over at Glamora, who nodded calmly. "Seriously? Avenging Gert meant eating some other girl's disgusting hair?" Trying not to grimace, I shoved every bit of it into my mouth. To my surprise, it crunched when I bit down, and then, after a few more chews, it melted onto my tongue like cotton candy. Well, not just like cotton candy. It still tasted like hair. But at least it went down easy. Then, nothing happened. I gave Mombi a quizzical look. "It didn't," I said.
"It will take effect slowly," she replied. "Now come on. Let's give these two some private time while we wait for the spell to work. Glamora's quite a skilled interrogator, you know."
She laughed when she registered my look of surprise.
"Everyone always assumes I'm the one who does the dirty work around here," she said. "Little do they know, I'm the nice one. Looks aren't everything, you know."
She beckoned impatiently from the doorway. I had to force myself not to look over my shoulder as I left. "What's she going to do to her?" I asked Mombi nervously when we were outside. Mombi waved a hand.
"Oh," she said, "nothing much. You know how it goes. The maid always has the most valuable information, and the maid always cracks under pressure."
Knox was waiting for us in the training room. He still seemed shaken from yesterday, but I could tell he was trying to cover it up. "Your job is simple for now," he said. The scrying pool rippled, and a map appeared. This time it wasn't a map of Oz. I studied it for a minute and realized it was of the palace. Astrid is a servant, but she's at the bottom of the food chain. She doesn't spend much time with Dorothy. Change that. Get close to the princess. Listen to her. Find out her habits, her routines. Find out when she's vulnerable and what she's vulnerable to. You'll only have one chance to hit her, and we want you walking out of there alive.
How long do I have before I kill her? I asked.
Don't worry about that for now, Mombi cut in. A spider weaves her web slowly and carefully. A witch is like a spider. At least this witch is.
So you don't want me to kill her?
Don't you worry. You'll get your chance to be wicked. But I'll let Knox explain all that.
Knox waited a beat and then began rattling off instructions. For now, you're there to watch and learn. You're there to blend in. Remember, you are Astrid, not Amy. And you are not to make any move against Dorothy without a direct order from us.
And how am I going to get that order? I asked, annoyed at how impersonal he was being.
We already have an operative in the palace who will be watching you. When the time is right, that person will bring you instructions. While you're in the palace, try to avoid using magic. There are security measures everywhere, and magic is off-limits for maids. They're a little lax on that rule.
If it weren't for travel spells and glistening charms, nothing would ever get as clean as Dorothy likes it, so they tend to turn a blind eye. So as long as you keep it to the small stuff, it shouldn't be a problem.
What about my knife? I asked, knowing that I'd feel safer if I could have it at the ready.
Summoning it shouldn't be a problem, he replied. That's not really a spell anyway, since the knife is always with you. You're just activating it.
Just don't summon any demon guides or cast any reincarnation spells, okay?
We both smirked at the irony of it. Just a few weeks ago, I was struggling to use enchantment to blow out a candle, and now we were talking half-seriously about me performing serious A-grade magic.
Well, you never know, Nox said, shrugging.
Anyway, if you do need to use magic that you think will set off the alarms, and I don't recommend it, it will be pinned to your location, so get the hell out of there before anyone can find you.
I'll do my best, I said.
The Emerald Palace, he said, turning his attention back to the scrying pool and pointing to a small square buried in a complicated grid of interconnected shapes. These are your private quarters. You're three floors down from Dorothy, and suddenly I wasn't paying attention. My stomach began to lurch. Something was happening to me. I had almost forgotten the spell Mombi had cast. The enchantment was beginning to take hold. The map of the palace in the scrying pool had disappeared, and my reflection replaced it. At least, I thought it was me. It was hard to be sure. My face was no longer my own. I was turning into Astrid. My eyes shone back at me, no longer their familiar brown color, but now the bright blue of a swimming pool. Then my pink hair was a radiant corn-silk blonde. I stared at my reflection, trying to make sense of it. I hadn't noticed back in the war room, but it turned out that Astrid was pretty. She was definitely prettier than me. Her nose was a bit bigger, yes, but in a way that made her face more interesting. She had a small, heart-shaped mouth and a perfectly symmetrical oval face. With high cheekbones and a chin that was neither too prominent or too simpering. I was still trying to get used to my new face when I realized the rest of me was changing too. It wasn't the most pleasant experience. My skin felt like it was being ripped apart as it stretched to make room for my new bones. It turned out Astrid was tall. When I instinctively put a hand to my cheek just to make sure that it was still there, I guess, I noticed that my fingers were now long and slender. It looked like I'd had a manicure recently, too.
"Call me old-fashioned," Mombi said, admiring her own handiwork. "But I liked the pink hair better."
I barely heard her. I turned to Nox, suddenly feeling scared, suddenly unsure if I was really ready for any of this. His face looked ashen for a minute, but then he swallowed hard and smiled.
"Don't worry," he said. "You're still Amy."
When I looked back into the pool, I couldn't say that I agreed. There was no trace of the old me. I was no longer Amy Gum. A short time later, I was wearing the maid's green uniform I'd seen on Astrid earlier.
After I had put it on, Glamora surveyed me, twirled a fiery tendril of hair around her finger in thought.